Welcome to All In. Today we're talking urban forestry. Sometimes called forest parks, there's a growing understanding about the importance of these spaces for cities and towns across Indiana. These areas can make communities healthy, healthier, safer, and more beautiful. And we would love your input on urban forests. Reach us at Facebook or Twitter, All In Indiana. And joining me is our state green infrastructure expert today. By phone, we have Carrie Tauscher, State Community and Urban Forestry Coordinator at Indiana Department of Natural Resources. Carrie, are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for joining. I understand that you're on your way back from a conference on this very issue.
I am, yeah. We just finished up with a pretty much week-long conference with the International Society of Arboriculture.
That's fantastic. So all these ideas fresh in your mind, and obviously you're immersed in this work across the state of Indiana anyway. So let's just start out broadly. I mean, what are urban forests?
So I think a lot of times people, when they're thinking in the context of a forest, it's that green place over there. But when I think about what urban forestry is and what urban forests are, is it's the trees and green spaces in and around our communities that we're interacting with on a day-to-day basis, and that our infrastructure, our utilities are also interacting with on a day-to-day basis.
So maybe you could give us a little bit of, you know, the history of urban forests and this whole, you know, field in the state of Indiana.
So in Indiana itself, I think it's progressed much like the rest of the country. As we settled communities, especially after a lot of trees were either cut down or we moved to parts of the country where there weren't trees, mainly Tallgrass Prairie in our state in a small region, is that we planted trees because we knew they were resources that we would either need to use or that they were basically the only version of air conditioning that you could find. So anytime you drive through the country, you see a farmstead and there's a big planting of trees around it. It's because it gets hot in Indiana, and without central air or air conditioning, trees are the best form of cooling that we have.
And so we know that trees, you know, help cooling. That's something that a lot of people do understand about the benefits of, you know, an urban forest in their city or their community. But really, we're finding out more and more about all the benefits. You know, let's touch on some of those. I know with that, you know, we're starting to see economic benefits. I mean, this helps the state if we do this, correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So there is a growing body. So urban forestry as a field has advanced immensely just over the last 20 years as far as research and capabilities. And some of the more interesting research, I think, for community leaders or even citizens is that having trees in your community, even though they are an expense to plant and maintain because they don't naturally reoccur, we have to plant them in our developed spaces, there's a huge return on investment. And a lot of that is in the form of ecosystem services and reducing and mitigating stormwater, reducing particulate pollution in the air, reducing emissions off-putting, so the reduction of ozone over shaded pavement surfaces. It just reduces the total amount of energy that allows ozone to be created in the first place, which is pretty amazing. But also social, right? We know that if you can escape to a green space in your community, especially even now, most recent research shows it's not just green, it has to be canopy above your head, right? You have to be encapsulated by green. It can reduce stress. There's some interesting research talking about how having these green spaces at schools, which I often see underplanted without trees, that it can actually lead to kids testing better on standardized tests, doing better academically, reducing depression, reducing neighborhood violence, because people ask, how is that a thing? And I always tell people, you know, if you're having an unpleasant conversation with your spouse, and you can go somewhere and cool off. If you don't have air conditioning, if you're in a kind of a cruddy place and you're just like not in the right headspace mentally, some reduction of cortisol and some nice shade can be the difference between like going to bed and not having a conflict or having something, you know, really unpleasant occur. So sometimes it's just little variables that can make a community a lot nicer.
And I have read some of the research, and it's really fascinating, you know, when you're talking about these social and psychological benefits of green spaces. But a lot of that research is happening now.
Yep. Yep. I mean, Kathleen Wolf is really the rock star in our industry doing a lot of the social science research. But there's folks even in Indiana that are starting to do research and how trees impact our well-being. Another one that I always think is really fantastic to bring up is the fact that there are health departments that have done research that show us that babies born in neighborhoods where mothers have access to tree-lined streets, so their neighborhoods have tree canopy cover, actually have higher birth weights. And I know that's another issue that Indiana deals with is just like infant mortality. Mm-hmm. Well, if your child is born a little bit bigger, a little bit heavier, that generally means that they're developed further and they have a better likelihood of success. So
wow.
These are all things that we can tie into reasons why we need to support our urban forests.
What do you think? Do you think that, you know, people in the state are becoming more aware of this? And do you think more education is needed in the supporting of urban forests?
I think there's always more education needed, especially as leadership changes. And that can be either very frequent or very infrequent, depending on the city and town that you're in our state. So just having consistent education, I think, is really important. I also think cross-training is really important. I don't think right now, anyway, that we're getting to the point where we can say confidently that we're reaching all of our civil engineers or all of our landscape architects and all of our city planners in the way that we need to. Because for a lot of development projects, the easiest thing to pull out at the end is the landscaping. And that usually is where our large canopy and even our small canopy trees are included into development.
Mm-hmm. So that is a barrier to
public awareness is huge. We do a program with the community and urban forestry program with the DNR that's called Indiana Community Tree Stewards. I tell people it's a really good introduction to urban forestry. We go from soil to schoolyard. So you understand what your trees are growing in, how they function physiologically, how you select them based on site characteristics, how to plant them, how to prune them, how to identify when you need help from someone who knows more than you, which I think is a really important point. I mean, we have a whole field of arboriculture and professionals that can help, and a lot of times people just say, well, I have a sawzall, I can fix that. And that actually lends to diminishing our urban forest canopy.
So the state has recently put a call out for grants available. We know that funding is another issue when we're trying to grow this green infrastructure in our cities and urban areas. DNR Urban Forestry Program leading that effort. How many years have you been providing these grants?
So to the best of the records that I have, our program has put out urban forestry grants for communities and nonprofits since the late 90s. And when you think about it, urban forestry, even within the Forest Service, was the late 70s, early 80s. So it's been for a while.
there's a number of different types of projects that could be funded. I mean, you know, when you think about, you know, making this happen, there really is quite a bit involved. I mean, we're talking
yep.
tree inventory and like forest management. Talk about, you know, some of the projects that people can get involved in their communities.
Yep. We always, by default, folks will always want to apply for tree planting because tree planting is probably the most exciting. It's the most gratifying type of project to do. But we really encourage communities to invest from the ground up. And that means knowing what you have first. And that comes in the form of a street tree or a park tree inventory. That inventory is going to give you a ton of information that will help guide you and help you develop a plan or a strategy. And that's another thing that we help fund through the grants. And that could be an urban forest management plan. It could be a prioritized planting plan. Where are the best places to plant in our community based on soil availability, site characteristics, or needs, right? What parts of our community have issues that we can directly link research to that can help improve by planting trees once we know where those places are? So some management and analysis. We generally say across all types of forest management, if you don't know what you have, you don't know how to manage it. so that we prioritize that in our grants. And then tree planting, working towards diversity, canopy resilience, and really thinking about community and forest health as a universal, like, grouping. It's not just either or, it's both.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is education and outreach. And that one is really where folks can take data from their inventories, run it through iTree, which is an amazing program that's free for anyone to use to understand the ecosystem services of their urban forest and promote those benefits across their community, let them know why we might be paying for an arborist as a new city position. Or it could be using that funding to educate or train existing staff so that they can attain a certification or attend training so that they can be better managers of those urban forest resources.
And so you've been involved in this for a while. You know, what are people in the state of Indiana doing? Are people getting excited about this? What communities are you know, really making strides in urban forestry?
So it's hard to single out ones, and it's always easier to point out the programs that are just insanely well supported, right? So in Indianapolis, Keep Indianapolis Beautiful is doing an amazing job, and they're doing some really groundbreaking stuff in regard to really targeting and focusing plantings. But in that same sentence or same breath, I can look at smaller communities like Goshen, where they've done their inventory, they've done a canopy analysis, they have targeted, prioritized planting areas in their community, and they've set a canopy goal, a really aggressive canopy goal, as a way to be resilient to climate change, where they're going to try to attain 40% tree canopy cover by 2045. And then we have small communities like Rensselaer, where their tree board has set goals, they have a basic inventory, but they're consistently planting and then following up with care for their trees. And I think that's just as successful when you think about needing that canopy cover in all communities.
Yeah. Well, Carrie Tauscher, State Community and Urban Forestry Coordinator with the Indiana Department of Natural Resources, thank you so much for joining today on All In and really giving us the broad view of the benefits of urban forestry. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And next up on All In, we'll talk to Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, you heard Carrie mention them, and a professor at O'Neill School of Public and Environmental Affairs as we explore other efforts in Indianapolis and beyond for communities to go green. You can reach us on Twitter or Facebook. Find us All In Indiana. We'd love to hear from you. And welcome back to All In. I'm Jill Sheridan, in for host Matt Pelser. As we walk through the world of urban forestry in Indiana, we would love to hear from you. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. So a majority of Indiana's population lives in urban areas. So how are cities responding to the call for more forest land in their very own backyards? Joining me in studio today, Heather Maurer, Director of Education at Keep Indianapolis Beautiful. Hi, Heather.
Hi. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much for coming in. And by phone today, Professor Sarah Mincy, Clinical Associate Professor at the O'Neill School of Public and Environmental Affairs at IU. Sarah, can you hear us?
Yes. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much for being here today. So as we take a look, we just mentioned the work going on in Indianapolis, obviously, you know, the largest city here in the state, and the work that Keep Indianapolis Beautiful has been doing here for quite some time. When did this work really become, you know, immersed in the city, Heather, would you say?
Keep Indianapolis Beautiful has been around for a little over 40 years. We actually started out back in the 70s, kind of branching off into our own independent nonprofit. And before that, we were an entity of the city of Indianapolis, focused more on litter pickup. Since that time, we still do a lot of litter pickup and a lot of other community-driven projects across the city. But I would say we really started becoming our own independent nonprofit and implementing our tree planting program a little over 40 years ago. And we do that now through our community forestry program.
And so, you know, talk a little bit about the work. You know, we know that it's not just, you know, planting a tree in your backyard. There's a lot that goes into the work creating these urban forest areas in Indianapolis.
Absolutely. And it really starts with a lot of partnerships, a lot of collaboration. And we're very lucky to have a passionate base of Indianapolis residents that are excited about trees in our city. And so through our community forestry program, this program is our effort to grow our city's tree canopy and really help make Indianapolis a better place to live. So through this program, anyone in Marion County can apply to have trees planted in their neighborhood, at a school, in a park, completely free of charge. And our team of arborists will work from start to finish, assessing the site, tree species selection, any permits necessary, helping with community engagement to get neighborhoods more excited about the tree planting. And then we will even help assist with maintenance for 3 years after the trees are planted.
So, Sarah, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, the social and the psychological benefits of having these urban forests in your community. And we know that Indiana and Indianapolis in some communities has had, you know, a little bit of a mixed history with having these green spaces available to everyone in every community. You've done some research looking into this. How important is that when we're considering trees for social factors?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I do have to be upfront about it. It's much more the research of my colleague Bernie Fisher and his students, Donovan Moxley being one of them. Their work has looked at redlining, red line mapping. Basically, this is a practice by Homeowners Loan Corporation in the 1930s. And this organization has been criticized for evidence of racial discrimination in trying to avoid giving loans out to places that they saw as financial risks. And in that consideration, they were thinking not only about income, but race and racially discriminating against folks. And there seems to be a legacy from this this kind of impact on loans. And so the work of Fisher and Moxley follows the work that we've seen across four other cities in the U.S. where we see that there is less canopy cover, less urban forestry in areas that were redlined. There's evidence of high-intense development in these spaces. And in Indianapolis, they also saw higher incidences of brownfield sites, Superfund sites, industrial waste sites, and interstates. The highways were more likely to go through these redlined areas. Mm-hmm. And so this is unfortunate because of all of those benefits that flow from urban forests, right? And then all of the negative impacts from brownfield sites and Superfund sites, right? We see then this this evidence that there's inequity in the environment based on race.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, Indianapolis is not the only area that's dealing with having brownfields and having, you know, sites where, you know, trees are not plentiful. What is your work, you know, in Bloomington? And certainly I know that Bloomington, you know, has done a lot of great work when it comes to urban forestry as well. What excites you?
Well, I do want to say, following up on that rather negative
right.
Indianapolis, What I'm excited about is the work of groups like Keep Indianapolis Beautiful. A lot of what has motivated KIB to plant across the city is not just sort of this grassroots interest from the public when they come to KIB and say, hey, we want trees planted. But KIB is also out there looking at where there's lower canopy cover, where can we begin to rectify these issues. And so a number of years ago, there was a great study out of some folks at IUPUI in collaboration with KIB to look at quote-unquote hot spots, right? These places across the city where the surface temperature was higher, where asthma rates were higher, looking at income and race and trying to make decisions that were very strategic about where canopy was low, where could they plant and make the biggest impact. And so it's those kinds of partnerships. Again, that was a partnership between the university and a nonprofit organization. Those partnerships, research-based decision-making to really try to improve equity and environmental benefits from urban forests. And that's one of the great things that I think is exciting.
You think, Heather, in recent years there has been more attention and really understanding, you know, that everybody has a fair right to having beautiful canopy over their head?
I absolutely agree that we've been trying to get that message out there. And just as Sarah mentioned, we have tried to act very data-driven. We've developed a really nice online tool that can be found on our website that makes canopy assessment data accessible to anyone. So we encourage everyone to go visit that, take a look, see in your own neighborhoods, see in other neighborhoods, so we can really get a better understanding of the canopy in our city. Marion County's tree canopy coverage is currently 33%, and in order to maintain that canopy coverage percentage, we need to be planting at an increased rate.
Way, love to hear from you on Facebook or Twitter. You can find us at All in Indiana. From JP on Facebook, he says he lives in a wooded area near Broad Ripple Park, and there's trees that are dying and falling down around in his neighborhood, four large trees just in the last 2 years. What kind of trees, he wants to know, would be good to start planting to replace old and dying trees in green areas already existing?
That's a great question. We like to plant trees that are structurally sound. A lot of the dead and dying trees that we see around Indianapolis currently are either silver maple or ash trees. Keep Indianapolis Beautiful does not plant either of those trees. We like to plant trees that are structurally sound and approved by the city of Indianapolis. And I would also encourage him to apply for one of our community forestry grants so that we could help. From a species standpoint, we really like to plant Indiana native trees, trees that are going to support our local insects, our local wildlife. These some of our top trees that we really like to plant. I'd say one of our top trees that we really like to plant are oak trees, because they support host over 500 species of moths and butterflies. So I would encourage him to research some maybe Indiana native trees. But again, it also, you know, it depends on kind of site selection, soil conditions. That's the kind of thing that we love to partner on. So get in touch with us and we'll come out and help.
You mentioned the native trees are really important because there are threats to Indiana forests, namely one insect that we've heard a lot about, you mentioned.
Yes. Are you referring to emerald ash borer in particular?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So these pests and diseases are a threat to our urban forests, which is why it's also important when we do a tree planting that we're not planting a monoculture, that we're planting a variety of species. And that way, if we do see a threat, if we do see a disease or a pest, it's not going to wipe out that entire street, that entire planted area, which is another recommendation that we have.
Yeah. So again, you know, really being aware, you know, not just necessarily, you know, going to your local store and picking up a tree and just planting it, because you really need to have some education and information behind the plantings. Ben on Twitter asks, are there any general recommendations about the minimum height trees should reach?
That's a great question. I would also say that's somewhat site specific. We like to be really careful, especially when planting under power lines. So we try to avoid planting under power lines. In general, we do like to plant large growing trees because we know that those are going to have the most impact. So, I would say it is a little bit site specific for a question like that. I would kind of assess your home, assess the planting area that you're looking at, and then maybe looking at a couple of different trees and resources that we have on our website where we list kind of the height, the growing season, whether or not it's flowering. We provide a lot of that information to as resources to residents.
Sarah, what are you hearing from students? Are you know, young people becoming more engaged in urban forestry in Indiana?
Yeah, we have a really robust group of students every year who are interested in urban forestry as well as urban green infrastructure in general. You know, more people live in cities now than in rural areas. We've kind of crossed that threshold in the global population a few years ago. And so as people move to cities, more of our students are from urban areas, they're keenly aware of how important it is that there are street trees lining their street, or that there's a park nearby to provide them these benefits. And so, yeah, we have an urban forest management course that runs at the O'Neill School of Public and Environmental Affairs. I'm teaching that this fall, prepping that right now, actually. And then I'm excited because we have a lot of our students engaged in research. We have a wonderful research institute called the Environmental Resilience Institute here at Indiana University Bloomington, and funded a research program called Prepared for Environmental Change that's really focused on thinking about how the state of Indiana can be more resilient in the face of environmental change and climate change. And so one of the main areas where we're working there is thinking about urban green infrastructure. And urban forests are, of course, the main component of urban green infrastructure to provide benefits for city residents.
And there's yeah, it's difficult to get off the ground sometimes. I did some reporting a while back on a project that was the Indy Redbud Project, and they were trying to plant, you know, a number of redbud trees in some of the low-income neighborhoods that had been affected by all the negative impacts of not having, you know, these green spaces and health and education and crime, the things we've touched on. But ultimately, you know, they just didn't have enough money to keep on keeping on. You know, what can people do that are really passionate about this and do want to make a difference, but may not know how? Heather?
I would say from a perspective from Indianapolis, we offer, like I said, a variety of options for grants. And so, you know, if they want to get started kind of on a small level, they can sign up for our Adopt-a-Block program, which is a great program to, one, start kind of getting that community activism, to start talking to your neighbors and to start kind of small, making an impact. Through that program, they can sign up to adopt their block, which simply means that a person commits to keeping that block free of litter. We provide free tools in order to help them do that. And then as a reward, we will provide a free tree and free native plants each year. So that's a really great starting point.
Sarah, do you have any advice for, you know, small groups that really want to make a difference but just don't know where to start?
Yeah, recognizing that it is a difficult thing to overcome something like a lack of resources financially. And I think that's what Heather's speaking to. There are ways to overcome some of that. I just want to encourage people, groups, to try to work together, because there are such great benefits that come from working together to develop the urban forest. And this is really where a lot of my research has been. What we've seen is that there are social effects that are pretty positive. We see people actually working together to plant and manage trees. One of the studies that we did a few years back in Indianapolis, we looked at neighborhood associations that had applied to get trees from KIB. And KIB expects them, through one of their programs, to help maintain those trees by watering them over time, over the first usually 3 years, I think, is the rule. Heather, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but and they have to do that through the summer, particularly when there's a lack of rain. And we kind of dichotomized the way that these groups were watering their trees. Some of the neighborhoods had actually assigned an individual tree to an individual household for watering, okay? And then there was kind of another group of neighborhoods that had decided, well, we'll water the trees all together. So they would do it maybe on a Saturday morning, and everybody from the neighborhood would show up outside with their buckets and their hoses. And it was really interesting what we saw. We saw higher survival rates and better tree condition when we went back and re-inventoried those planted trees in the neighborhoods where people had worked together. And if you think about it, it kind of makes sense that, you know, we theorized that that there was more accountability between people to actually go out and maintain those trees and maintain the watering. And so that was one of the things that we saw, better survival, better condition. But then also these folks self-reported at a higher rate that they were also more likely to engage in other collective action that benefited their communities. Because they had begun to work together and learned that they could work together, then they were more likely to have, for example, a neighborhood crime watch group that started after they had done the tree planting together. So these kinds of benefits that are both biophysical as well as social can come from these kinds of group tree planting projects.
Mm-hmm. We hear from Kenny on Twitter that we don't need the artificial growing of urban forests, just a cease and desist on clear cutting those that are already here. Tree forest and arbor cutting has happened all over Indianapolis, he says, in the past 20 years. Is that true, Heather?
So tree preservation is a very important part of preserving our urban canopy. I would absolutely agree. We have some wonderful organizations that really work towards tree preservation, including Indiana Forest Alliance, and those are a very important part of preserving our canopy. KIB mostly works towards increasing canopy through planting, but yes, we've absolutely seen a decrease in our urban forests, and we continue to see as our population infrastructure grow throughout the city.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining today as we're talking urban forestry. Heather Maurer, Director of Education at Keep Indianapolis Beautiful. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
And Sarah Mincy, a Clinical Associate Professor at the O'Neill School of Public and Environmental Affairs at IU. Thank you so much for joining today, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
Up next on All In, we'll be taking a turn, sort of a left turn here, a trip to some areas around Indiana and beyond, as we hear from a soon-to-return host, Matt Pelser, on All In. This will be a pre-recorded conversation. Matt Pelser will be back next week in this seat. Maybe we'll run into some urban forests at some of the places that he visits next on All In. We would still love to hear your conversation, though. Find us at Twitter or Facebook, All In Indiana. Previously recorded conversation between Pelser and Indy Star reporter Kelly Huang about possible road trips from Indianapolis. I don't know, maybe you can check out some of the urban forests in these communities.
This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Summertime is travel time, and some of the best trips are ones where you just get in the car and go. Of course, it helps to know where you could go that wouldn't take all weekend to get there. And that's just what Kelly Huang of the Indy Star decided to find out for us. And she joins us now. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. How's it going?
I'm all right. Well, you put together a piece, 10 unique road trip destinations within 5 hours of Indy. And what I think is so great about this list is that it's exactly what it needs to be. Because as you kind of say, anyone can think, oh, we can go to Cincinnati or we can go to Louisville or Chicago or St. Louis. It's never really top of mind to consider a place like Oglesby, Illinois, or New
right.
Harmony, Indiana, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that was kind of the mindset going in because I've been in Indianapolis for less than a year. And, you know, I thought it was just so neat how close we are to just so many destinations. So my main trip, road trips so far have been a lot of the larger cities, Chicago, Louisville. But then I started to look a little deeper and see like where these, you know, some unique road trips are and just towns that are a little bit off the beaten path or, you know, some that, you know, even if you've been living here for years, you might not have heard of. So that was sort of my goal with this piece.
And all these places have something very special to offer along with a little more intimacy than you'd find maybe in a more bustling city. I gather that that was kind of what you were aiming to do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just again, some places that are kind of have that maybe small town vibe or just, you know, some place that's really, really great for kids. Like that was another thing too. I tried to really provide a lot of variety. Like if you're a couple looking for like a fun weekend getaway, or if you are a family that wants to find something really interactive and interesting. So I think that was sort of my goal going into this story was, you know, how can we provide a place that every type of person would want to go to?
Now, I've been to some of these places, certainly not all of them, but now I want to go. So let's just start at the top and go through it. And I don't want to scoop your piece. I want to encourage everyone to check it out for themselves at the in Indy Star, either through the app or IndyStar.com. But maybe some highlights of each one of these places, starting with New Harmony. I had no idea the history of this place. And it starts in the early 19th century before we were even a state.
Exactly. Yeah. There's this gentleman named George Rapp, and he had, you know, a group of followers, and he wanted to create a utopian society. And so, you know, he came to this place and they built, you know, a town that they called, I think it was originally called Harmony, and then it became New Harmony. And so they just, and along the way, just these really interesting attractions were established. So I think the thing that, so when I was searching around, I came across this hedge maze, and I saw this picture, and it just looked so beautiful and interesting, like this, like these concentric circles. And I was just like, I want to go there. Like, what is this place? What is going on here? So that is like one place I started the story with, that with New Harmony, actually, because I'm like, yep, this is on my list. So
yeah. Well, and the hedge maze is really, I mean, that's something that has to be kept up, you know. I mean, you can't just let a hedge maze go.
Exactly.
So they've clearly kept this around as an attraction in New Harmony.
Yeah, and a lot of other, like, there's an attraction called the Roofless Church that just, again, it just looks so different and unique and kind of wacky a little bit, you know. And it seems like the town has really embraced, you know, their history for this kind of utopian society, which I think is so neat. And so, you know, I think it would be totally worth the 3-hour drive to get to.
Well, and if the town itself isn't utopian enough for you, perhaps the food might be. You highlight a lot of great local places to eat, too. And I appreciate that you gave us family options as well as 21 and over options.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, in every single place that I highlighted in this list, I made sure to have like a nicer, kind of more upscale option if that was available, or a family-friendly place, or just like, you know, a quick bite. So the place that stood out to me the most is this spot called Sarah's Harmony Way. And it looks like it's just this great neighborhood spot that everyone kind of gathers at. You know, you can have sandwiches, but they also have coffee, beer, wine, music. So it just seems like it's like a just a nice spot for anybody to go and drop in and grab something to eat.
And is this the one that sort of seemed like it had sort of a haphazard collection of furniture and antiques around?
Yes, yes.
Always, I think that's a mark of a good hometown place. It's a little bit messy, but I mean, isn't everyone's home kind of like that too?
Exactly. Yeah, it's got character, you know. You have your personality kind of come out a little bit. So.
And New Harmony has a number of bed and breakfasts if you want that experience, or you can just get a hotel room. And New Harmony could also be an addendum side trip if you just wanted to visit, say, Evansville for the weekend.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, if you just want to drop in for the day, you know, take a little walking tour, and then a lot of these too, I think you can mostly do like day trips too as well, at least the ones in Indiana. Maybe the other ones are a little bit far away, but.
Well, one of my favorite weekend getaways in Indiana has always been Nashville, or what I remember my parents calling Little Nashville when I was younger. They'd always go to shows at the former Opry, the music venue that was down there. I like it more because of the history and the setting. What can we plan on doing if we go to Nashville, Indiana?
So obviously Nashville is known for Brown County State Park, so that was another thing about this list as well. I had just written a top 10 camping spots list before, so I didn't want to like repeat everything because I listed Brown County on there too. So I wanted to highlight the town more, because when I went, this is one place I went to during the fall with the beautiful leaves changing and everything. I just love the town because it was just super, super cute and quaint, and just had all of these mom and pop shops and restaurants. And I think the little Christmas boutique that I think is there all year round.
Oh yeah, all year round that one's open.
Yeah. So I definitely love that because it's just Christmas times 1,000 in here. So, and they have, you know, a brewery and like great pizza place. That was a place that I stopped in as well. And just so many just cute little like places to stop in.
I might add too that nearby Story, Indiana, and the Story Inn, whose slogan is "One inconvenient location since 1851, you want to talk about out in the country, it's really out in the country. I think my ideal relaxing weekend, if I could just pick one up the top of my head, is renting a cabin near Nashville, going to County State Park, hiking trails 8, 9, and 10. You can tell I've been here before. And then canceling that workout with a dinner in either Nashville or another location on your list, Columbus. What's surprising about Columbus?
Columbus is so cool. And this is actually the top of my list, maybe right next to New Harmony, because and I learned about this through one of my coworkers. They said this is an architecture destination, and it actually was voted number 6 in the nation for architectural innovation and design by the American Institute of Architects. So that just, you know, immediately got my attention because I love really interesting architecture. So there's more than 75 buildings in the town by like really well-known architects.
And it's so surprising if you're not from Indiana. A lot of people who have lived, especially in central Indiana for a while, have heard a lot about Columbus. But I would encourage you to actually go, because you hear about it. It's one thing to hear about it. It's another thing to drive through Columbus, Indiana, and just be surprised around every corner.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, what struck me the most by looking through photos was The library there is designed by I.M. Pei, who is a very, very well-known architect. They have that really cool bridge that's suspended as well. So I know they do tours, so you can just go and take a tour, or you can probably just walk around and do your own self-guided tour as well.
Well, maybe we want to head north instead. Here's another great option for history buffs, the town of Battleground, very appropriately named. What happened there?
So there is the Battle of Tippecanoe Canoe, and they have a battlefield museum there that commemorates this battle between the U.S. forces, which was led by William Henry Harrison. And so they have a great memorial there. There's a huge park there as well, the museum, a monument, and hiking trails. So it's just a really great spot if you're really into history.
And another place up there is Wolf Park, which is a wolf sanctuary. And if you love animals, this is an experience that you won't soon forget. What do they do at Wolf Park?
So it's actually what struck me about this place is it's an education and research facility. So it's not a zoo. So they very much are there to learn about, you know, wolf behavior and, you know, to really, I think care for the animals and teach visitors about, you know, the animals themselves. So they have obviously wolves. They also have bison, foxes, coyotes. Visitors can come and take a tour and, you know, learn all about these amazing animals.
And I know they just had an event that I think they do every summer where they give cold watermelons to all the animals that are stuffed with treats like cheese and dog biscuits. And you can just watch them break them open and enjoy these ice cold melons. They also have foxes there. And this year there were kits, baby foxes, which I understand were adorable at this event.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I bet they were.
And
so if you love animals, this is like the place to go.
Exactly. And it doesn't hurt that Lafayette is right down the road, right?
Yes, exactly. So, again, you can go up there, you know, check out the Battlefield Museum, the Wolf Park, and then you can head to Lafayette. And there's all sorts of stuff to do there. You know, on this list, I included a lot of different restaurants. Obviously, they have everything, you know, from casual spots to high-end spots. And you can also obviously visit the university as well.
Okay, let's talk about the eighth wonder of the world, which is in Indiana, or at least it's so been called.
Yes.
And that's in French Lick.
Yes. So I think when I first learned about French Lick, I just saw that amazing dome that's part of the West Baden Springs Hotel. It's 200 feet high, I believe, around there. And it just looks so spectacular. And obviously the French Lick Resort is the main attraction in French Lick. So that place is enormous. They have pretty much everything in there. It's like its own town, I want to say. There's a casino and golf courses and tons of restaurants. So I think it's such a good spot for, again, like lots of different people, like whatever your interests are, you can probably find something to do there.
And I've been through French Lick, and French Lick is a great place to stop and see if you are also visiting the Hoosier National Forest, which is French Lick is pretty much on the edge of. And Jasper's nearby, too. And there's stuff to do there as well, like eat at Schnitzelbank. I always like to joke that there's no easy way to get to Jasper. So if you're in the neighborhood, it's worth a visit.
Yeah. And I think what also sounded really cool to me is the French Lick Scenic Railway. So you can take a scenic ride through the forest if you don't want to hike it. And you can, you know, they have food, and I know they have a wine train as well. And there's something called the Wild West Holdup Train, which I don't know what that's about, but that sounds awesome to me. So, right? Like, do they hold up the train during your ride? I don't know. Like,
it's one of these true life immersive theater experiences.
Yeah,
maybe.
Exactly.
Well, okay. So back up north, family fun time. What can we find in Monticello?
Okay. So, I mean, I think most people that live in Indiana are probably familiar with the Indiana Beach Boardwalk Resorts. But I kind of chose to highlight the two reservoirs that are there, Lake Schaefer and Lake Freeman. So if you're looking for something a bit more outdoorsy, if you like boating, fishing, swimming, it's just a nice little getaway. They obviously have rentals as well, so you don't need to have your own watercraft or anything, but you can just go and, you know, spend a whole day or a weekend up there just enjoying the lovely water.
And there are a few out-of-state options on your list, too. And I know our show is called All In, but let's leave the state for just a few minutes. We won't talk about all these, but I was really surprised by Oglesby, Illinois.
Yes. So again, like my list, I tried to find places that were under 5 hours to get to. So I came across Oglesby because it's really close to two state parks, Matheson State Park and Starved Rock State Park. And both of these have really, really gorgeous waterfalls and canyons. So they're obviously great for, you know, if you're looking for something outdoors to do, taking nice long hikes, if you like to camp, if you want to stay in the cabin for the weekend, this is the place to go.
The pictures just look beautiful. Like, I was really surprised when I saw it, and I was not familiar with Oglesby. I thought, oh, okay, that's probably southern Illinois, all of which is the Shawnee National Forest. But no, this is actually northwest of Indy, and so that's pretty cool. And so in Utica, Illinois is nearby. Lots of great food there too.
There's this Cajun place that sounds amazing. They have frog legs, crawfish etouffee, so you know, if you're looking for, you know, taste in New Orleans, that is definitely a restaurant you want to check out.
And I'm saving the best for last, but I'm a little biased. I'm a bit of a cave enthusiast, and it just so happens that we are less than 200 miles from the longest cave on the planet.
Cave City, very appropriately named, Cave City, Kentucky, and it's the home of Mammoth Cave National Park. So there's 4,000 miles of passages,
400.
4,000 miles of passages and 400 miles explored, actually.
Oh, is that what they say?
Yeah, so I think there's still a ton that have not been explored, and I don't know why. Maybe you need to go and do some cave exploring
Well, I
yourself.
actually have many friends that go down there and they explore down there. It's so funny that that some marketing person said 4,000 miles at 400 miles. Who's to say? But it is very cavey down there, I guess.
Very cavey. So they obviously do cave tours. There's hiking, there's biking, and there's also right outside of the Mammoth Cave Park, there's the Crystal Onyx Cave. And again, that's like when I first discovered Cave City, I saw a photo of this Crystal Onyx Cave that just has these really, really cool formations. Have you been there?
And not to Crystal Onyx. I've been to the National Park, and I think maybe one other showcase, but it is all the same cave. It's all Mammoth Cave. They're all connected in some way. But because there's so much cave down there, you know, back in the, I mean, gosh, I could, you could really get into the weeds with me on this, but back in the 1800s, a lot of people opened up their own show caves, and there's just a long history of caves opening and closing and being found and then being lost. And it's amazing cave history down there, too.
Got it.
And great. And great food too, and I know lots of cave explorers, and they all eat at El Mazatlan Mexican restaurant when they go down there. So if you want to eat like a cave explorer, you go there. Where else can
There
we
you
eat?
go.
Where
That's where
else?
all the cave explorers go, apparently.
That's where they go.
There's a great barbecue place, there's a pizza and pasta place, and also I think one of the most interesting places I found was called Esther's Farm Cafe. It sounds like they have farm fresh food there. They have an ever-changing menu. So anytime you go there, you'll probably get a different, you know, daily dish. So that is definitely one place I would suggest. And the thing I love about Cave City too, it's just like it seems like a paradise for kids. Because I mean, who doesn't like what kid doesn't want to go explore a cave? And they also have Dinosaur World there as well.
Right
And
off the
then they have
interstate, yeah.
Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park, and that has so many different attractions there. I mean, water attractions, pools, and water slides. So, it, like I said, it's like a kid's paradise down there.
Well, if you couldn't tell, travel gets me excited. So let's road trip, make some plans, and if anything, let this list remind you to consider other places other than all the nearby cities. Head into the country a bit. Kelly Huang from the Indy Star, thank you so much for this travel inspiration.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really fun.
And I hope you remember that voice. That's host Matt Pelser, who will be returning from paternity leave, hopefully not too tired, to discuss mental health in schools next week. That will be Tuesday's show. Thank you for joining today on All In as we were discussing urban forestry, all the efforts going on here in Indiana. I hope you'll join us next week. Again, I'm Jill Sheridan, in for host Matt Pelser. This is All In.